Welcome to The Aging Scientist, focusing on all things science and aging. I'm Clarissa Giebel, and I'm a researcher at the University of Liverpool, exploring inequalities in dementia care and aging. In this third season, I will be talking to different experts in the fields about aging well. In this episode, we will be talking about the importance of staying socially active. According to Age UK, more than 2 million people in England over the age of 75 live alone. And more than 1 million older people say they go for a month without talking to a friend, neighbor, or family member. Whilst living alone does not mean feeling socially isolated or lonely, older adults are more prone to lacking social contact. This is likely something we have all experienced during the pandemic in some form or another, which is why it's important to raise the topic and discuss with experts. I am joined today by Di Burbage and Justin Shenton. Di is the Service Development Manager at Chinese Wellbeing, where she has worked for just over 10 years. Prior to this role, Di worked as a volunteer for the Liverpool Chinese Business Association for several years in her spare time and was the only non-Chinese committee member. Justine is a registered social worker and has been working in the voluntary sector with older people for the last 10 years. Most recently, coordinating the Older Persons Forum in Sefton and for the Liverpool City Region. Welcome both, great to have you on the show.
Hi, Clarissa. Hi, Justine.
Hi, Dan.
So, Di and Justine, both of you are working in the voluntary sector, providing services for older adults, and we have worked together over the past few years in some way or another as well, which has been great, working on research together. Justine, do you want to share a bit about the Sefton Older People's Forum and what you're doing there?
Yes, thanks, Clarissa. We've been running as an Older People's Forum for about 20 years, and we're part of the National Federation of Older People's Forums that's run by Age UK. Although we are actually hosted by a local charity in Sefton called Sefton Advocacy. We have 400 members in Sefton, all older people, and living in the community. And in normal times, we would have been meeting every month in six different locations across the borough to talk about the issues of concern for older people. But since the pandemic, we've been holding our meetings on Zoom. So we have a smaller group that meet regularly on Zoom. And really we're about engaging older people in what's happening around them in their community, influencing policy decisions and local development, taking part in consultations, and also having campaigns, having our own campaigns that older people themselves raise, such as at the moment we are trying to encourage people to contact their GP if they need to and not feel put off or be misinformed that the GPs are not available when they are. We work with other local groups. Our meetings are led by older people. Our agendas are set by older people. And we have a partnership meeting where our older representatives meet with leaders in the voluntary sector, health and social care, to raise some of the issues of concern directly with decision makers. And we think that works well for us in Sefton so that we are able to have some achievements. And we're an age-friendly borough and our forums are part of our age-friendly commitment and our partnership board is our age-friendly steering group. So we work to the principles set by the Centre for Ageing Better as well. And health and wellbeing is at the heart of it, really. And since the pandemic, really, we are trying to encourage our members to focus on their own health and wellbeing and maximise opportunities to socialise and get out and about.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get talking about the pandemic and how that might have affected things in a bit again, because that's really key with all these community services. So, Di, you are specifically working with the Chinese community in Liverpool. What kind of activities does Chinese Wellbeing offer and what's the community like that you're working with?
Okay, well, Chinese Wellbeing is well known in the community because we are a charity which now has been sort of running for over 30 years. We primarily care for the elderly in the community. So we provide services which start really from an age group of 55 onwards, but the majority of our members are probably the 75 plus. Primarily, Chinese Wellbeing provides, one of its core services is home care, and we're commissioned by the City Council to deliver that. But we operate very much in a sort of person-centred way, which means that we look for other opportunities to involve all of our service users in other activities, anything and everything which helps them to maintain independent living for as long as possible. And that's the core of our service delivery. So in addition to home care, we have an Evergreen Club. And the Evergreen Club provides activities, dancing, pom-pom dancing, singing, crafts, art, outings, walking group, anything that our members are interested in. So all of the services and all of the activities are very much driven by what our members would like. Sometimes they're not very forthcoming, and sometimes they're not sure of what sort of things that we could do and what is possible. But we ask them, and they're always happy with the way we structure activities. So Evergreen Club's very successful. And in addition to that, we have a number of dementia support services. So we have a dementia network group for people living with dementia and their carers. And we have what's called Tea House Reminiscence. And Tea House Reminiscence is very much an activity-based session which raises awareness of dementia and is actually sort of for people who may be sort of at risk of developing dementia at some stage. So they were the activities that we were providing prior to the pandemic, and of course then that did change how we operated once lockdown number one came in.
Absolutely. And just picking up on the fact that you are working in a group or organization that specifically looks at a minority ethnic group, do you provide certain activities that might be specific to their cultural heritage, or do you also feel that maybe the people that are engaging with your services, they wouldn't necessarily engage with other groups because they might not be targeting at that cultural angle, if you know what I mean? So they would like to specifically engage with this Chinese element of things.
Yes, most definitely. We have 34 staff and 34 are Chinese origins. And all of our activities are culture and language specific. And the language mainly spoken in Liverpool amongst our elderly community is Cantonese. So they are all very, very specifically culturally and language appropriate to the group. Very few speak English, so joining other groups is very difficult. So, you know, that's why there is a real need for the activities that we provide to help reduce that loneliness and social isolation. And also, it's important to maintain cultural identity and connectivity to your community. We can do that through a lot of cultural events and the activities that we do.
And just to pick up on that, would you say that the people that are using your services are mostly people that are living on their own, or do they have family members, or basically is the service that they're using, Chinese Wellbeing, that gateway into staying socially active, which they wouldn't necessarily have outside? Or what's kind of your experiences?
For those probably age 75 plus, they're mainly living on their own. And sometimes that's a difficulty, in as much as once you start having mobility issues, getting to a venue is very, very difficult. And when lockdown was eased, and we have only recently opened up the centre that we use for one day a week, we hire a centre, many were reluctant to travel on public transport. There are still those issues. It's not just the elderly in the Chinese community, it's the elderly across the, you know, all communities. But yes, they live on their own. They're very independent. They do have family members, but largely speaking, they want to keep their independence, and that's exactly what we're supporting them to do.
What about the SEFT and Older People's Forum, Justine? Is it mostly people that are living on their own as well, or what people engage? What older adults engage with the forum?
It's mostly people who are living on their own. Some of them are living with their spouses. One or two are living in extended family, but mostly people who are living on their own, I must say. Some of them are in the houses that they've always had. Some of them are living in retirement living, sheltered housing type accommodation. And we have had some links with care home residents, and we have had some attendance. And recently we managed to do that through Zoom, actually, which was very nice. But it's largely set up for people living in the community, really, as I say, to engage them in their local community and keep them active and promote their health and well-being.
And this is probably going to generate quite a biased response now from both of you, but have you or are you noticing any changes in those older adults who are engaging with your groups and services? Justine, do you want to maybe go first?
Yeah, I mean, we notice quite a big physical decline in a lot of our members. And we did actually a video called Chair Exercise Session, because we used to run them in our meetings every month. We were sorry to see people were struggling to do things they would have done quite easily. And people have reported to us, you know, that their strength and balance is not as good as it was previously because of not being able to go out or attend classes. And the other thing we've really noticed is loss of confidence in some people. So as Di was saying, you know, this fear really is still around about using public transport, and loss of confidence to go out and about, particularly where there might be groups of other people. So that's a shame. And I really feel that there's a big piece of work to do, really supporting older people to get their confidence back and feel happy again going out and about.
So that's COVID related, though. That's how the pandemic has impacted things. What I was referring to is whether you've noticed any changes, possibly even pre-pandemic, in when people started to use your groups. Are there any, have you noticed particularly positive effects on how they're socializing, their well-being? So from not being part of a group to then joining your groups actively, have you noticed any changes?
I see. Sorry, Clarissa, I misunderstood your point there. Oh, yes, and people do report how happy they've felt being able to interact with their peers, you know, and also our meetings are often around a particular purpose, engaging on something, you know, giving your opinion about something. So people have felt useful, and that's been a great thing, I think. So, yes, I mean, we've also had people recently widowed who've come and joined our groups, and they've found that very, very positive and supportive. So I think that social interaction is vital, actually.
What about you, Di?
Yeah, we've got real sort of examples of where family members have actually introduced their elderly members to our Evergreen Club. And prior to coming to the club, there was very little activity, very little motivation to do anything. But introducing them into our Evergreen Club has given them a new lease of life, and they've started to sort of low-level activity, even pom-pom dancing in a wheelchair. It's something that, you know, the sort of has got people sort of just excited to be in the group and to be doing something as a group, and the pom-pom dancing has really worked well. So yeah, we've got really good examples of when people have come to the group later on, and joined for the first time, which is quite difficult, you know, for older members of the community to come to a group. But their family have usually brought them along and got them introduced, and the staff, our team, are just absolutely amazing. And so they've quickly settled in. But many of our members have been coming to Evergreen for many, many years. So, you know, they've sort of aged well with us, so to speak.
Definitely. And we've touched upon the pandemic, but there's so many, I suppose, impacts that the pandemic has had on all sorts of strands of life. So in terms of your services that you're providing, how has the pandemic affected the services and access to older people? Di?
Well, like everyone in a similar situation, like Justine as well, when first lockdown came, we sort of wondered how we were going to get the elderly through it. How were we going to reach out and give that support that they, you know, that they desperately needed to stay connected to the community? And at the beginning, we did eventually get our sessions transferred online. And it was a long, long process because not many had actually ever used Zoom. They'd never used devices. And, you know, we were asking them and encouraging them to get involved. And it did take a lot of time and a lot of patience. And even today, whilst we've got 45 members, which isn't the total of our membership, but we've got 45 members who now regularly join our online sessions, which we hold three days a week, a number of sessions. And that includes exercise, pom-pom dancing, singing, arts and crafts. We've managed to do it, but it took months and months and months to get there. And even now today, we have a tablet loan scheme, and some of our members who have got early stage dementia, they do need a member of staff to go and remind them. And so we managed to do that. We managed to get a member of staff who will call to set them up for activities that they really want to be a part of. And we've continued that. We set that up during the during lockdown, and we've continued it. So it was difficult to begin with. And for the people who don't have a device, weren't interested in our loan, tablet loan scheme, have no connectivity at home, although, you know, for 3 months we had the funding to connect people, we've maintained weekly telephone calls, doorstep visits, and we've identified areas of need, support needs, medication, shopping, welfare benefits, and we've supported them throughout. So I'd say a really difficult year, the first year of the pandemic, really difficult.
Absolutely, sounds like it, but also that your group is doing a lot to really enable older people to stay engaged as much as possible. That's fantastic. Also about the digital literary skills. What about you, Justine? What about the Older People's Forum?
Yeah, it's a similar story really, Clarissa. I mean, if anybody had said to me before the pandemic, oh, you'll be hosting your meetings on a video call, I wouldn't have believed them. And I wouldn't have thought that we could get people on that, you know, but we have. And, you know, at the beginning, it was quite tricky for some people. And we'd got kind of WhatsApp going on the phone. And then we've got iPads set up with Zoom. And we were trying our best to encourage people. But we've got a good group of people who are comfortable with that technology now. But as Di said, it's not everybody. And I think you know, the people who are not on it obviously are more isolated, and we've done the same and tried to keep in touch by telephone and mail outs. And I'm going to be doing a big mail out coming up soon with a new booklet that we've made, encouraging people to keep well and be active and listing social groups and social opportunities. But it has been a very tricky period. And I think, as well as the difficulties we've had with our groups keeping engaged, there's been an enormous acceleration in the pace of change in the world, you know, and lots of things seem to have quickly gone online only, and lots of kind of help agencies seem to shut their doors and not reopen them. And I think that's been particularly hard for older people to keep up with.
Especially if they don't get any support in any training or knowledge about it, or if they really live on their own, they don't have anyone younger maybe who is trying to help them with that. So those people that are engaging with your services, many of them have stayed engaged throughout the pandemic, etc., and they're getting maybe not the same benefit as face-to-face services, as we've kind of found and talked about in our research as well, but it's a lifeline, it's a crucial lifeline to stay connected, absolutely. But let us just think for a moment about those older people that are not seeing or speaking to anyone, that are not accessing any groups. Do you actively try and engage with people to get them to your groups, or how do you approach this?
Yes, we've maintained the weekly calls, mm-hmm. and we still do those, even though recently we've opened up on a Monday for 3 hours. To begin with, people were quite anxious about coming, but those people who literally have had no activity, they've had no connection via a Zoom, etc., and they've just relied on our phone calls, we have seen them start to come back, and they were absolutely delighted to be together and see the people that they haven't seen for so long. It was just, the reports of the sessions have just been amazing. They seem to be confident in the measures that we're taking in the centre. So, you know, like temperature testing, taking a lateral flow test beforehand, keeping all the windows open, even though it's getting chilly, they keep their coat on and would prefer that. Mask wearing and only allowing so many people into the room at any one time. So they're happy with the procedures. And the only problem with some still is the transport. It's just the transport situation. With regards to the world changing, I agree with what Justine's saying, but many of our elderly don't tune into national news. Part of the problem during the pandemic, because no one was getting information to them in the right language. And so no one understood shielding letters issued at the beginning. And so we had to quickly identify across all of our service users who were on that list, who'd got those letters, and who really didn't know what those letters were actually instructing them to do. So there's a lot of things going on in the world that many of our elderly probably are not aware of. And that in itself created a bit of a dilemma for us, because we're all aware that there was a rise and a spike in hate crime towards British Chinese and Southeast Asian communities with the pandemic. And we've given talks on it to raise awareness, but how far do you go? You don't want to worry people. You don't want to worry the elderly about stepping outside. We want to make them aware of what to do in a situation. Most of them are not actually going out in a public place. So we're sort of taking a view on that at the moment. But yeah, it is difficult. And that's why bringing everyone together so that we can talk within their peer group gives them the opportunity, I suppose, to swap news and keep and get that connection back to what's going on.
Yeah, definitely, especially when people are struggling to understand the language that is widely spoken in that area. So then it's ever so much more important to have that community, isn't it, and staying socially engaged to get proper news and not fake news, for example. So what about you, Justine? Are you trying with your forum to actively approach people that might be lonely? So maybe getting new members as well to ensure they're not just on their own at home and don't have any social contact?
Yeah, and we've actually had quite a few new members, funnily enough, who've come to join us on the Zoom calls, which has been lovely. And family members have helped them set themselves up. I think we're quite well tied in with local provisions such as social prescribers and the community connectors. and we do get referrals that route, and also through the hospital, which has got a very good volunteer sort of follow-up welfare call when people are discharged home at the moment. And so we're also getting referrals that route, which is great, you know, because we're not out and about so much ourselves at the moment. So I think the best routes for us are our networks with other community groups, and as I say, signposters and social prescribers who are actually getting referrals from GPs for people. So that is helpful.
That's great. Is that applicable to your service as well, Di? Do you get referrals via social prescribing maybe?
No, we haven't. And very recently we've met with the Central Liverpool PCN and their head of the wellbeing link workers and social prescribing team to just to talk about that, to talk about the fact that we exist, this is what we do, to hear more about how they get a referral and what they then do with that referral, and to hopefully build more of a connection so that in future, you know, people that may be referred to them, they and are Chinese people, they have somewhere to sort of refer them on to. And the thing is that if you don't speak Cantonese, it's very difficult for a GP to refer somebody to a health link worker where there's a language barrier. Because the whole point of the health link worker, from our understanding, or the wellbeing link worker, is that you establish a relationship with the patient. You have to understand what their interests are, what their issues are, and then you can start to formulate a plan for their needs. But if you've got to do it through an interpreter, or, you know, there is that language issue, very difficult. So we probably understand why perhaps we don't get referrals from wellbeing link workers, but we've made the connection and we hope that things might change, and we can certainly step in and hopefully, you know, sort of even just a referral to us, and we could take that on board and see what we can do to support that individual.
Absolutely. It's kind of worrying what you're highlighting and kind of illustrating that quote I was pulling up in the introduction as well about HUK estimates that there's around 2 million people living alone and many of them don't receive any social contact. It just highlights again that there are barriers to certain groups of older adults or individuals in connecting socially with people that are not their family or friends or neighbours or living in their local area. And it's really about trying to break down those barriers so that every single person who would like to stay socially active can do that. So lastly, maybe, what would you both suggest to someone who is feeling lonely and would like to stay active, but they just don't know where to start? What should they do? Any tips? Justine, maybe?
Normally I would say, you know, go in your local library, look in your GP surgery, there'll be posters up, there'll be information about groups, take that step, you know, have courage. And if you do manage to get into something like a friendship cafe, and there are those around and about at the moment, or come to a small group in a church hall or anything like that, and people will welcome you. And maybe those people have taken that first step too, and also felt fearful and not confident about it. So I think try and be positive. And we've been looking at a very good booklet at the moment, which is all about encouraging people to try and be positive, have courage, take that first step. Don't write yourself off, I'm too old for that now. Try something new. And also, I think, you know, you must believe that you've got something to offer. There's a lot of kind of negative language around aging, and there's been a lot of that recently in the language around the pandemic, with people being thought to be dependent or very frail or, you know, extremely vulnerable and all these things. But actually, older people are often very resilient and they have a lot to offer. So I think you must believe in yourself and what you have to offer and try and take that first step and engage with people.
That's really important. And I can just echo what you're saying there, Justine, about that positivity, trying to stay positive. It might be hard, I think, for all of us, not just maybe for older adults, but sometimes just trying to take that step and you just don't know how good something can happen afterwards. Di, what about you? What would you suggest to someone?
I could reiterate Justine's comments, really. It's a bit more difficult if you're elderly and you don't speak English. It's quite difficult to connect, but generally speaking, most people will know where, if you have a community centre, most people will know what the structure is around a particular community. In Liverpool, we have about 10 associations. They all offer different things. You know, sort of, they are social groups, cultural groups, depending on where you come from, where you originated from. But if you're looking at sort of lacking the confidence to step outside your comfort zone, and that's very often described as Chinese elderly are very often described as lacking confidence to step outside of their comfort zone, mainly because traveling on public transport, if you can't speak English, can be actually quite scary. Now there's an additional barrier, which is fearful of catching COVID because no one wears a mask. It's lacking the confidence, but it's just connecting perhaps to that group that you share common interest, common language. It's step outside.
Absolutely. And we're talking here mostly about social groups, but Di, you've referred to also your activities like the pom-pom groups, etc., that you're hosting or that your organization is hosting. Staying socially active can be so much. It can be connecting with your friends, family or neighbors. It can be going to coffee clubs or what you were referring to, Justine, as well, really just to have a chat. But staying socially active can also mean you might go, I don't know, to a gardening club or something in your local park. They might do some gardening clubs, for example. I've seen them in our parks here as well. Or anything that really interests you, to have that common interest, and then you do stay socially active. So certainly that's important. But I think that's all we've got time for today, Justine and Di. That's been really interesting. Thank you so much. It's really important to talk about how people can stay socially active and also raising the profile of the services that you're working for. So thank you. And if you want to learn more about Chinese Wellbeing or the SEFT and Older People's Forum, do have a look at the bio with more details. And for more discussion into aging well, have a listen to my next few podcasts. Thank you and goodbye. Thank you both.
Thank you. Thank you, Clarissa. Thank you.